Welcome everyone to On Call with Insignia, where we go on call with Southeast Asia's emerging technology startup leaders and investors. So in our second episode this year, 2021, we're going to talk all about InsurTech in Indonesia, which according to our very special guest today, is reaching an inflection point in the country with rising GDP per capita, fragmented providers, and a largely uncovered population. To introduce our guest and lead this conversation, a colleague is coming back to our show, in-house fintech expert and principal Samir Chaibi, whom our regular listeners may remember from our calls with the CEOs of Indonesian wealth management platform Ajaib and Philippine digital bank Tonik. So Samir, how have you been?
I've been great. Thanks, Paolo, for having me again. I'm good. Pleasure to be back to discuss InsurTech with our guest today. So InsurTech is indeed a really exciting space, precisely because of the opportunity to solve the inefficiencies of traditional offline distribution, especially in emerging markets like Indonesia. And so today we're on call with Giacomo Ficari, who's the CEO and co-founder of a company doing just that. It's Lifestyle, and it's Indonesia's leading insurance marketplace. Before we get started with Giacomo, I just want to speak a little bit about Lifestyle growth and how Insignia met with Giacomo. So Giacomo was previously co-founder of Aspire, which is a Southeast Asia SME challenger, neobank, and also an Insignia portfolio company. Prior to venturing into fintech, has built leadership experience in Asia e-commerce space with companies like Lazada, Lindigap Lazada Malaysia, and Groupon, where he was the CEO of Japan and Malaysia. He's also a Y Combinator and Rocket Internet alumni. Thanks, Giacomo, for coming on call with Insignia today. Since we just started 2021, a new year, a new decade, did you come up with any New Year's resolution?
Yes, I do. We want to make sure that more people are protected in Indonesia. And our tagline is really protect everyone.
Perfect. Since this is our first episode on InsurTech, I'd just like for you to paint a picture for our listeners of what the industry is like in Indonesia. What is the insurance customer journey currently like for Indonesians? What opportunities did you see in the market that motivated you and your co-founder to start Lifestyle in 2019 after co-founding and leading Lazada?
Yeah, so when we approached insurance, we saw that today in Indonesia, insurance is largely sold by traditional offline agents, and they have created the mistrust over the years. And definitely due to a push approach, but also for the lack of transparency of information. Not always agents are really well trained on the details that matter a lot in insurance. Also, they give limited choice to customer. In fact, in Indonesia, agent can sell only one brand. So customer, they talk to the agent, can only have that brand. And lastly, we saw a really strong lack of convenience when buying and when using the insurance. For example, there's a lot of paperwork, long approval processes and periods, and there's no easy way to do claims. So it's really not a surprise to us that agents were pretty hated in Indonesia, and they are clearly no longer capable to help a more educated, younger, and digital consumer. Starting from that point, then we start thinking how we should analyze the market, right? And what are the opportunities that we see? So after a few years, there are a few questions that we ask ourselves. And the first one was, how big is the impact that we can generate on people's life? And we saw that as a function of our impact is equal to the number of people that we can help and the importance that the insurance in this case, has for each person. So we realized that in Indonesia, there is 270 million people that are not covered. Only like 2% is super massive number of people that we can help. And then we realized that actually insurance is really important in people's life. It matters a lot for each individual. In fact, buying an insurance plan is one of the most delicate financial decisions that a person can take for himself and for the family and will impact many years to come. So it was really a magical realization. We can really impact a lot of people. Then we ask ourselves, is it the right timing to fix this problem? Maybe it's too early or maybe it's way too late. And the answer was really, yes, it's the right timing. And insurance market is that we really see that at an inflection point and we feel it on the ground. Usually GDP per capita is the more simple kind of data point. Lots of papers say that the inflection point arrives at 4,000 GDP per capita per year. From our experience, maybe slightly higher, but it's definitely the right moment for Indonesia. In fact, majority of the income for top tiers one and two city in Indonesia is way above that. And we do really see it in the ground. And the last question, the box that we wanted to tick is someone else doing this or has already solved this problem? And then we realized that actually there is not really one leading shopping destination for insurance and customers still don't have a good experience and a good alternative. So we really decided to be the biggest online marketplace for insurances and fix the problem for the customer. As you know, our founding team is coming from Lazada. And then we saw that the same digital evolution that we experienced back in 2012 with Lazada is actually happening really similarly to insurance. So for us, it was quite obvious that this is a big problem, is the right time, And we saw the same evolution to e-commerce, to insurance.
Got it. And just to continue painting a better picture for our listeners about InsurTech in Indonesia, how would you describe the landscape vis-a-vis other markets in South Asia or maybe India or China? And from the perspective of InsurTech, are there unique challenges to establish distribution and drive adoption in a country like Indonesia?
So we saw that in distribution, we look a lot at India, actually, and we saw fundamentally three business models. The first one is the Zonang model, actually from China. So microinsurances embedded inside an online checkout of a third-party external platform. This is the usual travel insurance that you buy or you tick when you buy a flight ticket. Then we saw there was another model, we call it the Turtle Mint model from India. This model helps traditional offline agents to sell better, faster. This model doesn't focus on the customer, but focus more on the agent. So it's kind of like a back-end system and software for agents. And lastly, we saw the Policy Bazaar model from India also. And this model is about being the number one shopping destination for insurance, but also the number one brand. So it's kind of like a D2C of fintech or D2C for insurance, if you like. And this is really a direct-to-consumer model that is changing how insurance policies are purchased and offered in an alternative way to the traditional offline agents. Besides that, we also saw that not only consumers benefit from this, but also insurance carrier, they see on online distribution as an incremental channel and not really a cannibalization model that attack the traditional agents. So we really saw the Policy Bazaar was the winning model for consumer and from the industry. And that's something that we decided to go for. And going to your second question, what are the challenges? The first one was we needed to get clarity on which is the right target audience. And the second was, once you got the clarity, what is the best way to reach the target audience? So on the first point, it was not really obvious for us initially to understand who to target. Of course, we wanted to help everyone. So we were targeting the entire population, especially the lower income, right? We thought those are the people who need more help. But soon we learned that selling insurance to middle low income is definitely a noble action, but is really arduous and inefficient. It's simply because those people don't really have enough income to even cover the daily expenses. So definitely they're not going to have saving for insurance. And then we actually learned that the right target audience is really the rising middle class. They have a minimal level of saving and education, and they can really allocate a little bit of those savings to insurance. There's a lot of papers saying that, as we said before, this is 4,000 GDP per capita per year, an inflection point for insurance. In Indonesia, the middle class is growing rapidly, and in tier one and tier two city, the income has already surpassed the inflection point. So getting this clarity was not easy, but we got that after a few months. The second challenge was, how do we reach this target audience that is a little bit more narrow? And we definitely didn't want to use the old pushy method of traditional insurance that really have failed customers in the past. And we understood that people that have searched for insurance or personal finance topics and advisors, specifically online, have already a pre-intent to buy insurance. So it's more like there's already an initiation. So we started to create online content about insurance, personal finance, that address these needs of customer. We call it a top of the funnel approach, and it has been working really well for us in this 18 months of operation. In fact, today we are the biggest online marketplace by traffic with 3.5 million visitors every month. Rapidly, we combine 1 million social media followers. And this today generates actually a really big portion of our business, and it's purely organic. So it's great to see that we found the right audience, and we are building something the customer actually wants.
Just to go back on what you just said, right, about building that differentiated business model, I'm curious about the thoughts that was put behind building that Policy Bazaar model, approaching it from an online to offline model. And we actually wrote about this ourselves on our business review at Insignia. But I'm curious about what was the thought process here and how did you build that really strong brand combined with telesale operation? And at the end of the day, now that you're trying to crack that insurance distribution model, how does LifePal model compare to other players in Indonesia?
So we start approaching the insurance distribution with two components. The first one was lead generation and then lead conversion. And the question we asked ourselves was, what should be done by technology and digital marketing? And what should be done by humans, the insurance agents? And we realized that the lead generation should be done online, because in this way, leads have a clear intent to buy insurance. They are applying, they are looking for help. And this causes, of course, a higher conversion rate from a business perspective, but also a better customer experience. We don't need to be pushy and aggressive like traditional agents. So lead generation definitely should be done online. And the second was lead conversion. So we realized that these parts require human interaction, mainly because insurance policies are quite expensive and they can be also complicated as well. But we also realized that we cannot leave it to human completely. We actually need to enhance them with technology. So we have been focusing a lot on the software that helps agents to sell better and make them super agents, like we like to call it. So today it becomes really easy for an agent to work with us and deliver a good customer experience and also make the targets and convert.
Seems like it's really about qualification, right? Really making sure that the intent is there, really making sure that there is the ability to buy, and really making sure that whatever product you're selling actually fits into the requirement and the pain that the client is experiencing, which is not what most offline agents are used to do. It's all about selling. It's all about shoving product down the throat of their clients, right? And this is why this industry has always been seen as a push industry as opposed to be a pull one.
Correct. So we really need to build a pull business in a push industry. And lead qualification, as you said, is really important. What this means is, given that we have so much traffic and data on the website, we can actually start collecting those data and really profile and qualify the leads and understand what is the right offer that we should propose to the customer. And this is what an agent will propose to the customer. Like, it's not really random when an agent will call you and we offer like 2-3 products. It's really filtered by the data analysis and qualification. And this is something insurance never done, because of course they don't have a massive traffic on the website. They don't have maybe the DNA to really analyze those data and have and really match demand and supply. We found this really powerful and believe on this more lead qualification with data and pull approach.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about what happened last year in 2020. Obviously, there's been really interesting trends and shifts from both providers and consumer because of COVID. Tell us a little bit about what you saw.
Yeah, for us last year was really important. We learned a lot. There's a lot of things that happened, but the biggest event was definitely COVID. It has accelerated the awareness among consumers around health risk and the importance of being protected with an insurance. Also, given that it is much harder for a customer to meet traditional agent face-to-face, lots of demand has shifted online, and that's where LifePal is. So we have been really lucky about this shift. And in fact, our website has increased rapidly. We went to 3 million organic visits every month and 1 million social media followers. And our net premium has been growing 30-40% consistently every month since January. In my view, this shift will be permanent and it will remain after COVID. So this awareness and probably less face-to-face meeting. So we've been definitely lucky on that.
And you've been positively impacted by COVID. And I guess talking a little bit about health coverage in the middle of the crisis when it comes to Indonesia, right? The majority of the population by now is kind of covered by the Universal Public Insurance, BPJS. How do Indonesians think about health coverage in that context? Do they actually seek higher and better coverage on top of this? So what's their relationship to health insurance?
Yeah, we iterated a lot on this topic. And what we conclude was that I would say the bottom of the pyramid, so kind of the low income, they will definitely use BPJS. And it's a pretty decent coverage. It's kind of a full, there's no limitation. It covers pretty well. Maybe the operations and the customer experience is not great, like the long waiting period. But for people that really are low income, that's a pretty good solution that the government is offering. We noticed that when you go a little bit upper in income, so we are really talking about a middle class up, people want better alternative. And this could be through like company offering health insurance, or even people that want to have a really extensive coverage for them and the family. So I think BPJS is great, but it's going to stay definitely for the low income.
Got it. That's very helpful context. Let's look at what's happening under the hood. I think our listeners would be very interested to know about the company culture. And so how would you describe what's happening in LifePal internally, and how does it reflect in your brand and customer experience?
We have three major business principles that shape our culture, and that's what we are focusing. The first one is speed, then is ownership, and then is simplicity. We are really obsessed with speed. So we are always forcing ourselves to test and learn as much as possible and keep the learning cycle as short as possible. I like to see a company not by the year where they've been funded, but I like to see the age by how many tests they can run per year. And that's really the power of a startup. The other principle was ownership. And we don't say this is not my job, or this is another department job. It's not my accountability. We just get it done if it helps the customer. And the last one, something really dear to me, is the simplicity. I always say the simplicity makes us effective. And this can be applied to ops processes, to the customer journey, customer experience on the app, even to the analysis and reporting that we do. Because this is not really an easy topic. If it's really hard to understand, no one can really use it, and therefore it's not effective. So really these three things, speed, ownership, and simplicity.
This is a really powerful set of ideas, especially for a company that is building its playbook as it goes in a country where nobody has done it before. You have a pretty sizable management team now. Each and every one of them, I'm sure, have ownership around their functions. You have also a telesales team, and I assume that it's very difficult to maintain the level of speed, the level of ownership, the level of simplicity across all functions, and to make sure that the telesales agent, for instance, reflect well on the customer experience. So how do you apply those three values on a daily basis?
You're actually right. It's not easy to maintain them. I saw also in Lazada, when we were growing, we had to kind of go through and resimplify things over time, because it's so easy to get your software or your program to get more complex, your processes, analysis. I think the element where we saw that is really on how we manage our agents. That's somehow we like to see my customers as well, because they use our software. And those are people that don't really have necessarily an insurance background. So if we don't make things simple, you have a lot of screw-ups, and they translated in really bad customer experience. But everything on our software for agents is really straightforward, and it's really on a control environment where it's really hard to make mistakes.
That's good. And I think if anything, COVID-19 is the year of making sure that the company is resilient, is the year of making sure that whatever you're building stands the passing of time, is the year of making sure that your playbook works. So I think you've done a tremendous job at standardizing processes across the company. So we spoke about the past, we spoke about your playbook. Let's take a look about what's ahead. Can you share with our listeners and with us, if you want to fast forward 5 years from now, what is LifePal going to be like?
If we talk more about 2025, so a little bit longer term, I think it's really important for us to stay really focused on the customer experience and deliver value to them. And this means 3 points for us. The first one is really keep a transparent content and policy reviews on the website, so customers can really find all the information with clarity and transparency, and they really can trust us and can avoid those misleading behavior from traditional agents. The second is we need to keep growing our selection. We already are the company that has the largest selection of brands and policy in the market. So customers can really find what is right for them and not what an agent is trying to push them to buy. And lastly is really convenience that happens pre and post purchase. So we will be focusing more on our application post sales. And how can we really stay close to the customer where emergency happen? So we really aim for the long term to become the number one shopping destination for insurances and the most trusted brand about insurance in Indonesia. Our tagline is your reliable friend, the friend you can trust and rely when emergency and delicate matters around insurance really happen.
We really hope that you're going to become the reliable friend for anybody who's looking for an insurance product in Indonesia, regardless of its complexity. So to close things off, we always ask our guests to share some of their favorite things in our rapid fire question round. So let's start with this. What's the biggest takeaway you had from the YC program you joined?
Yeah, first was the product market fit. And this is what founders should focus on in the early days, especially before raising big rounds. Many startups, from my experience, die because they do not find product market fit, even if they have raised large rounds. They will just die later or they will stop growing. So really build something people want, not what founders want, or maybe even the investor wants. And then raise your Series A only when you are sure that you have that. Second is scale the business with technology and product. Don't throw people to problems, but develop solutions that are scalable with software. We apply this principle in LifePal. We haven't increased headcount just a little bit since January last year. So it's been really a year where headcount has been flat, but we are growing tremendously just with technology and product.
What's the biggest takeaway you had from your time as a founding member at Lazada and that you've brought to LifePal as a CEO now?
So the first one is that execution eats strategy for breakfast.
The famous one.
Strategy can be done at night, over the weekend, but during the day you need to execute. And if you're as a CEO, maybe you don't necessarily have to execute everything, but make sure people execute and get that full commitment motivation from everyone. The second was that we saw that Lazada really scaled fast. So we saw that your role as a leader, but also as an individual contributor in a fast-growing startup, will change roughly every 6 months. And it's really important to accept this change. I see many people rejecting it, maybe in a direct manner, maybe more in a subconscious, but really maintain this mindset of becoming a technical expert in every role, in every evolution of the company. So you may be asked to do a year digital marketing, it can be finance, logistics, or it can be also a seniority. Like now you're asked to be a CM expert, and then maybe in 6 months you're asked to be a CMO. So really keep the flexibility, because the company every 6 months change. And I saw many people not being aware of that.
Hmm. What is the one thing you learned at LifePal that you wish you had known earlier?
Yeah, I started realizing that hypergrowth is not for everyone. And I'm realizing that not everyone has an urgent and personal need to grow the business or a department by 30, 40% every month for years. Many people like the idea, but they actually fail to execute. And this is really hard, because a lot of time is demotivating, because it's really hard to grow 40% every month, especially in the early days where resources are limited and you need to really be focused. So I've seen people accepting smaller growth because hypergrowth is painful, or maybe they are unable or unwilling to grow personally, or willing also to find their resources externally. So to solve this problem, I changed my hiring criteria. Before, I was hiring by startup fit, that, as we know, is really important, especially in the early days. Now I start hiring by fast-growing startup fit. And if a person has been part of a startup that grew like 3-5x a year, this person probably is comfortable with hypergrowth and thinks that it's even normal. Otherwise, it can be painful for many people, this journey.
I'm curious about what makes it painful in your experience. What makes it so difficult for a quote-unquote normal growth person to adapt to this? What are the key challenges that a person like that would face?
Sometimes product market fit and product iteration takes time. And even if you get it, really few companies get product market fit immediately exponential. Lazada was not really exponential by magic. It was us in the beginning really pushed the growth. And this is something that doesn't come for free. And it's a lot of stress, right? You don't know if you're going the right direction. Maybe you have been failing the past 6 months. So this kind of sense of uncertainty and the fact that it's not automatic makes it really draining. On the other side, I think people who have lived that, they actually have this mindset where they actually accepted that it's tough. Maybe because the first job was actually in a fast-growing startup. So they don't even know how easy
they don't realize how good they are.
Like a nice corporate. And sometimes I meet with people and say, oh, you're growing 40% a year. Oh, this is really slow. My previous company did IPO, we were growing much more. And then you meet the opposite person, oh, 40%, you're kind of the idol. So you really see different perspective of what is normal. And it's really hard to change how people see normality.
I think that's very, very helpful for anybody who's listening here and either wants to recruit or become a founder. Hypergrowth is really a mentality that needs to be entrenched from day one. Essentially.
And it doesn't mean that if you didn't experience the past, you cannot do it, but just let's have this awareness.
Absolutely.
And this clarity that that's the journey we are going through and it's going to be tough.
Absolutely. Got it. Is there anything else you'd like to announce?
Well, we are hiring in many exciting positions for people that really want to become the superheroes and fast track their personal growth. So if you really want to learn from people that have built Lazada from day zero and be part of one of the most exciting startups in Indonesia, as you know, we have raised one of the biggest rounds in InsurTech last year, and we are growing 40% every month. We will be really happy to share this amazing journey with you and make sure we protect everyone.
So whoever you are and wherever you are, if you want to become a superhero, I really recommend you reach out to Giacomo and the team. So on that note, thanks Giacomo for coming over on Call with Insignia. I'm sure our listeners learned a bit more about InsurTech and how fast it is evolving in Indonesia. It's been really a privilege for us to partner with LifePal since the early days, and we look forward to all the good work you're doing to improve access to insurance for Indonesians. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks, Emily. Speak soon.
Stay on the line with us for more conversations with our founders and investors in the region. Until our next call, I am Paolo Aquino, and this has been On Call with Insignia Ventures.